Good evening, everyone.
Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to America's Most Haunted. I am Teresa Argy, the Haunted Housewife, and I am going to do this solo tonight because my partner, Eric Olson, he took the reins this afternoon, and last night we had a great show with Devin Marble from Destination Truth and Haunted Highway, and also we talked to the folks at Paranormal Witness about the Dybbuk Box, which was a great show, and if you missed it, make sure that you listen to the archive show. Great shows. Last week we had some great guests. In fact, we've been rolling like crazy since we launched. Great guests every week, and tonight will be no exception. Tonight we've got a couple of great guests joining us, Shannon Lusk and Elliot LaChance. And they have fascinating stories and are going to be very interesting, so stay tuned. And we're going to be getting them online in just a few minutes when they call up. But let me tell you a little bit about America's Most Haunted. We are the brand, the book, and now the Blog Talk Radio Show. And if you haven't seen us on Facebook, make sure to check out our page and follow us on Twitter at AM Haunted. Great show. We are going to be launching our book very shortly. We're covering the most haunted places in the United States. And, of course, we can't get to all of them, but we will get to several of them. And we'll be talking to some of the people that have visited there and have had personal experiences there. And also bringing you some other guests. Anyone from the paranormal we find interesting, anything we can talk about. So don't worry, hang on, and we're going to take you on quite a journey. I want to give you a little bit of information on tonight's show. Tonight we welcome, as I said, Shannon Lusk and Elliot LaChance. Shannon and Elliot have joined forces to take on the paranormal with a strong focus in history. As children, they both lived through the stress and confusion of a haunting, and these incidents shaped the adults they have become today. Shannon is a Bowling Green graduate who majored in popular culture with a focus in museum studies and is currently volunteering as a curator and archivist at the Ohio State Reformatory, better known as Mansfield Prison. Her passion for history and the paranormal and English made her the perfect choice for editor of author and haunted survivor Stephen LaChance for his upcoming book, Blessed Are the Wicked, which is the sequel to his previous book, The Uninvited. And Elliot LaChance lived through one of the most violent hauntings of our time, The Heinous Story, which is the focus of Fear House, which is one of the most popular episodes of the Discovery Channel series, A Haunting. His experience was documented in his father Stephen LaChance's book, The Uninvited. This event led him to seek a better understanding of ghosts and hauntings with a desire to help other children who are dealing with similar traumas. Elliot seeks to intertwine child psychology and the paranormal in an enlightening, educational, and entertaining way. He has worked alongside his father as well as children of the great producers, the Booth Brothers, in every aspect of documentary and video production. Shannon and Elliot are currently working to bring their love of history and hauntings together in a smart, edgy, and entertaining manner as natural-born historians. So, coming up, we're going to bring them both on. As soon as I get them online, I will bring them on board, and we're going to talk to them about what's going on. And let's see who we have online now. Hello, caller. Who am I speaking with?
This is Shannon Lusk.
Oh, my gosh, it's Shannon. Surprise, surprise. Hi, Shannon. Thank you so much for joining us tonight.
How are you?
I am taking this. I'm great. I'm having a good day. I'm taking this one solo, so a little nerve-wracking in the beginning. But luckily, I know Shannon, so this is like talking to an old friend.
Oh, no, you'll have a great time. You'll have a great time because Elliot and I, when we're on the air, oh, my goodness. It's something
else.
Well,
I'm sure I will. For those of you who don't know, I actually work with Shannon. I'm under her wing, so to speak, learning a little bit about the archiving system at Mansfield at the Ohio State Reformatory. And it's amazing we get any work done at all because we like to talk and we share a lot of similar interests. But I'm very glad you guys could come on tonight. I can't wait to hear your stories. You embody everything I love about the paranormal because you come at it from a historical point of view. And I think that's what's missing in a lot of the focus of the paranormal, that they're talking about evidence, but they're not talking about the stories and the history, and I think that that's very important. So this is going to be a good time, and I think someone's calling in, and I think it might be Elliot.
Uh-oh.
Let's see. Oh, no. Caller, welcome to the show. Who am I speaking with?
It is me.
Yay! And it's Elliot.
Hi, Elliot.
Hey.
Thanks so much for joining us, Elliot. I really appreciate it. As I was telling Shannon, I'm taking this solo tonight, so it's going to be me. But I'm sure Eric is listening right now, so he can critique my every word. I'm the paranormal person of the team, but he's the journalist, so I'm learning from him as well. I know about ghosts. I don't know a lot about anything else. But thank you so much for coming on tonight. I really appreciate it. I cannot wait to hear your story and to hear what's happening with the two of you. I, myself, am very familiar with your story. I remember watching the episode of A Haunting when it came out and was just completely creeped out, of course. And it actually was just on. Like, last week, I think they aired it again.
Yeah, no, Shannon.
So it was great. Yeah, and your father, Stephen, he's going to be on the show in a couple weeks. We've got him coming, too. So
oh, be prepared.
Be great. Yeah.
You think
know,
we're
you
crazy.
I just feel bad it's only an hour show, but, you know,
well,
what can we do? But, well, let's start kind of at the beginning. Elliot, let's get a little bit of background about your experience and what happened to you as a child and how it propelled you into the paranormal, and then you can kind of chime in and how you hooked up with Shannon and what the two of you are doing. So let's see. Tell us what happened. Tell us about Fear House, about what happened that one house that you moved into that kind of started this along the way.
Well, okay, I was 11 years old, and my father came home one day. He's like, hey, I got us a house to move into, because we were living in an apartment. And he was like, it's the best house, you're going to love it, it's got a backyard, it's got a big backyard, it's got a fence, you go out and play, you do all this other kind of stuff, you got an upstairs room with your brother. And so I was like, sweet. So I think it was a week later, we pack up everything, and we go to move in, and it was fine for the first week. Like, nothing really happened until that weekend, but at that weekend, we were cleaning out, because, like, nobody lived there for a while, so we were cleaning off the outside of the house and cleaning up the grass clippings off, like, there's a little patio, like, a little sidewalk that went around the back, and so Dad's like, hey, we go downstairs and grab the hose. I'm like, yeah, sure, I'll go downstairs and grab the hose. Well, at first it was me and my brother. So I went downstairs, and I don't know, Dad called him for something. I don't remember. But, so I go downstairs and grab the hose. Well, and when I get to the bottom steps, and it was, like, off to the right, so I went and I grabbed it. And I turned around, and I start walking, I got the steps, and I got this feeling in my gut. Like, something, I don't know, I don't know if I explained it. I don't know, it's kind of this, like, pressure, tense feeling. And I didn't get it. I didn't know what's going on. So I started going, like, fast toward the stairs. Well, when I got to the stairs, something was chasing me. That's the best way I explain it. Like, you can feel something right behind you. So I take off the steps. The steps, they were shaking like toothpicks. Like, I was running up this, and, like, I was a little kid, so I didn't weigh that much. And these steps were shaking like a 400-pound man was running up right behind me. So I ran upstairs screaming, yelling, and Dad came running in the house, asked me what's going on, and I told him, and he's like, well, yeah, there's nothing down there. You'll hear. He's like, come down with me, we'll go check. I was like, I ain't going down there. No, he's like, come on, come down here. And I'm like, no, I'm not going back down the steps. And he's like, all right, well, I'm going to go down there and look for you. So he goes down there, and he makes this big old scene, stomping down the steps. Hello, is there anybody here? Yada, yada, yada. And he comes back up steps and goes, there ain't nobody there. He's like, you just need to calm down. There's nothing bothering you. There's no monster or nothing down here. So I was like,
and your father, he's not a little guy, is he?
No. My father is 6'7". He was 6'7", and at that point, he was like 285 muscle. So
he would have been an intimidating force to anything that would have been in the basement had there been maybe a person hiding in there or.
Oh, yeah, definitely, yeah.
And you think that's what he was expecting to find, or did he think this was maybe your overactive imagination?
He thought it was my overactive imagination from the move and my mom leaves when I was a kid and stuff like that. So, Well, after that, so stuff started happening. Like, I don't know, you'd hear noises. Like, at night, I'd wake up, and there was a... Because we were staying in Dad's room at the point, because their dad was ordering beds. So I'd wake up, and there was, like, this glass chandelier thing that would always be swinging. And I'd hear noises upstairs and whatnot. And then I go upstairs the next day, and I look around, and my toy boxes were strung out, moved around. I go to ask my brother. I say, hey, were you looking for something? He's like, no, man, I haven't been up there. I was like, oh, all right. So that went on for a little while, and... I was pretty freaked out, and, well, one night, we're all watching TV, doing something, just watching TV, and my dad, like, I go to the bathroom, so I asked my brother, if Shannon knows my brother, looks at me and goes, you can't go to the bathroom by yourself, and my sister looks at me and goes, no, he's a little boy, and they started making fun of me and all this other stuff, and I was like, Dad, will you come? Dad's like, no, go on, you're all right, you got this, and I was like, all right, I'm going to do this. I was like, I'm not going to let this thing scare me. It's nothing. It's my imagination. I'm gonna go to the bathroom, and do my business. So, I went to the bathroom, and at the bathroom, the doorway. You look at the top. There's like a stairwell, like right outside the door. It's like a little hallway. Right outside the door is a stairwell. So I left the door for some reason. I don't even know why I left the door open. And I start doing my business, and I hear some steps. I'm like, what is that? So I turn and I look. Well, up the steps was this smoky black figure. Like, the best way I can explain it is, have you ever seen those vacuum commercials where they put the smoke in, like, the glass tubes and suck it out?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like that. It moved like that. And then, as it was coming down the steps, it formed into a clown.
A clown?
Yes, ma'am.
Oh, well, see, that's creepy to me. Clowns creep me out.
Yeah, me too.
Describe
my whole life.
Clown. Describe
it,
though.
Did they creep you out? Is that something that creeped you out beforehand? Or, I mean,
I've always been terrified of clowns for some reason. But this sent me over the edge. Well, it looked like, the way I can explain it is, it's had this red curly hair, had makeup, but didn't have any eyes.
Ugh.
And, they show in the Discovery Channel show, like, this big old zombie clown kind of thing, and it's actually more terrifying than that thing is, because it never really fully, like, formed all the way down to the feet and just floated down the steps. Well, I took off running to my father, and I think he started believing me then, because, I mean, I was pale. I was freaking out. And Dad
had your brothers and sisters, had anything happened to them at this point?
My sister, it wasn't too long after that, my sister, her closet door would open when she was sleeping. She'd hear whispering and stuff like that. Well, so that happened. And I think it was the next weekend, Dad was going out of town because he was a corporate trainer. So he used to travel all the time. So we were sitting down to play a game. Well, so me and my brother are sitting on the couch, in front of this coffee table, sitting on Monopoly, and Dad's in front of us on the couch. And behind us is, like, there's a dining room. There's a living room, dining room, and then the kitchen. Well, behind us in the dining room, I look up at my father, and he's pale white. I'm like, okay. And then he looks at me and goes, hey, guys, why don't we get up and go get a soda or something? I'm like, all right, well, let's go get a soda. I'm fine with that. And so we go get up, and me and my brother are like, well, we want to play this game. And my sister's like, well, no, you got to come on, let's just do this. I was like, all right. So we get the door, and Pops is shutting the door and locking it, going to lock it. And this scream, I don't know, the best way to describe it was somebody getting hurt. This was a male scream. So we all took off. I remember I jumped in the front seat, and Dad literally did like this ninja roll over the hood of the van and jumped in the car. Well, I turn around, I look behind me, and this thing is up in the top window staring down. Now, it wasn't the same clown. I get that question. It wasn't the clown thing. It was this black figure, like, of somebody standing up there. And we drove off to my grandma's, and Dad went on a trip. Well,
wow.
Yeah, he was gone for, I think, a week or two. When he came home, he's all like, all right, we're going back. I was, Dad, you sure? And he's like, yeah. yeah, it's going to be okay. I'm like, all right, so we go. It's fine the first couple nights. And then it was a Sunday, and we were supposed to get up for church, to go to church, get ready for Sunday school. And we wake up, and Dad's like, come on, guys, we got to get ready, we got to get ready. So we're getting ready, and then Dad calls Grandma and goes, well, we're getting ready, we're going to be at church soon, or be to your house soon. And my grandma goes, why? She goes, you guys missed church. Well, Dad's like, well, what time is it? She goes, it's 5 o'clock in the afternoon. We slept from 10 o'clock the night before to 5 in the afternoon. All of us.
Wow.
And I don't know, people want to know what happened. I don't know, and I don't want to know. They talk about doing hypnosis, and I ain't going to do that.
That's highly unusual. I don't know if I've ever heard anything like that happening.
Well,
Dad
says,
like,
yeah, Dad says with us kids, there's no way that would happen. Dad said in general, with any kids, no kids would sleep that long and just stay in one spot.
Wow. Wow, what an experience. My God. And so do you think that whatever was happening in the house was targeting you? Or do you think that you were feeling the things that were happening kind of more... Was it more directed towards you, or you were sensing it more strongly than anyone else, or was everybody having kind of their own level of experience?
It was more directed towards me.
Were you the oldest? Where do you fall in the rate? You're the youngest. Okay. The most vulnerable, huh?
Yes.
Wow.
Well,
so...
Well, there's more. There's a little more. After that night, we go to Grandma's, and I remember Grandpa made barbecue ribs. So good. But, We got home, and I'm exhausted. I'm tired still for some reason. And I go in and lay down, and I fall asleep. Well, the next thing I know, Dad busted into the room and tells us, come on, let's go. I don't know what's going on. And then I'm kind of like hazy, and I start to realize that people are screaming, but there's nobody in the house but us four. And so I'm freaking out. Eli's freaking out. And so we take off at the house. And we pull up to the top of the street because my grandma's on her way. And you see this last night I was in the house. You see this black figure going from room to room. Like, you see, because all the lights were on. You could see it just shifting. Turned around looking for us.
Wow. That had to, well, obviously that had to really make an impression on you.
Oh, yeah.
And... I mean, you know, you hear about these things happening, but to have something happen to that degree where everyone is affected,
mm-hmm.
I've done a lot of investigating, and I've done a lot of residential cases, and usually maybe one person or two people are experiencing things that are happening, but for the whole family to experience something at that level, and it's really remarkable, and it's remarkable that no one actually got hurt, but it definitely did
mm-hmm.
make a mental impression on you.
Mm-hmm.
What happened then? You when you finally decided, or your father finally decided, it's time to leave the house. Was it the end of it? Was there anything paranormal happening in any other house you lived in after that, or was that kind of the end of it right there?
That was not the end of it. My father fell under an oppression kind of thing, and I'd find him after we moved out because he went back to help a family that lived there. And, well, I found, like, when he was in the process of that, I found him at night. He'd be standing in the living room just staring at a wall. I mean, just sitting there for, I guess, hours or what. And I'd go to nudge him, and he'd be like, oh, go, I'm going to bed. And he'd turn around and walk and go to bed. Stuff like that, I'd see things here and there. Well, he was very jumpy. Like, very, 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 very jumpy. And he was he was mean. He was a very, very nice guy then. He fell into suppression, and it changed him. Like, it was bad. It was very, very, very bad.
Well, yeah, I can only imagine. I mean, everybody, I think, experiences things to different levels, but, I mean, oppression is different than just being affected by
yes.
something. I mean, it goes beyond that. And to have children, but when he was, even though he was under the state of oppression, he did attempt to help the family that moved into that house after you, correct?
Yes,
and
he did.
And and they were experiencing their own sort of hell at the house.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, now, did they ever, I mean, I've seen the show, so, I mean, I kind of know what happens. And then I've heard your father tell the story. But so this continued long after you moved out of the house, affected other people. What is the state of that house now? Do people still live in there, or is anything been done to cleanse the house or to find out?
A family does live there, but the thing is, a family lives there for 2, 3, 4 months at a time, and they're gone.
Wow.
Yeah. And
wow.
There was one family that was there for than that, and then out of nowhere, like, they talked, they somehow, one of them got Dad's email, and they said they kept on, they kept on harassing him, and telling him that it's his fault all these people are coming to his house and doing, they're coming to their house and doing all things, and, like, the next thing you know, all of a sudden those people just disappear, and, like, they literally packed up in the middle of the night and left.
Wow. And was there ever any kind of research done by your father, anyone in your family, or anyone else maybe that you contacted after this to find out what the history of the house was?
Yes.
Do you think this was something that was connected to the property
or the land?
I can
tell you some of the history. The land was owned all there by a Civil War captain, and where the house actually sat was where he had his main slave quarters. Some of the history is here saying some of it's written down. Well, supposedly it's written down is that his wife died from, consumption? Her lungs filled with blood.
Pneumonia
and stuff like that. Well, the story, we got some more of the history and talked to some of the family, and the story that the family knows is that he actually killed her.
Ooh.
He had a doctor that punctured her lung and made her lung fill with fluid, and she drowned.
Wow.
Yeah.
I guess that would leave its mark.
Yeah. Well, it's because she ended up having a child with one of the slaves, and the story is that he went down to the slave quarters and just started killing all the male slaves because she wouldn't tell him which one it was.
Oh. Wow. Well, that's a horrifying story. I mean, it's fascinating, but it's horrifying.
Yeah.
And now I know that your father calls himself a haunted survivor, and I guess you would fall into that category as well, that you survived something so traumatic. Now, is this what eventually propelled you into the work that you do now? And and tell me about how you got involved with Shannon and how history played into this and how you got involved with that.
Well, After, technically digging into this, that history is what really got me. Well, I was always interested in, like, Civil War history and stuff like that. Well, where was I? I was into history. Well, my father, I was looking for a way to help other kids in my situation. When I first got into it, I was trying to help, like, kids like me, you know, like, that were stuck in the situation. And I worked with father on a couple cases, not as many as he worked on. And, well, like, I don't know, I was a history buff. I don't know, I started loving history. I did all research on Civil War and all this other stuff. And, one day, Shannon added me on Facebook because she read Pops' book. And we just started talking. And I talked to her how much I liked history and then how much she did. And then she's like, well, I do the show. I just started the show. And would you like to come on sometime and just co-host with me for a show? I was like, yeah, why not? So I get on there, and, like, I guess we did so well together. She asked me, she's like, well, do you want to be the permanent co-host with me? I was like, yeah. So, because she's a history buff and I'm a history buff, so we get on there and we do research. I mean, we do research. I'm talking about, like, we pick a topic, and from... Well, I think that show was on Wednesday. So from Thursday to that Wednesday, we'd research the whole time. Like, whenever we had free time to find out about this stuff.
research that is an underutilized thing in the paranormal. A lot of people think that watching ghost television is research. So you hooked up, sounds like, with the perfect partner, because not only did you have your love for history in common, but Shannon also had your experience as a child. Let's get into a little bit about what happened with you when you were a child and how that got you interested in combining your love of history and ghosts and hauntings.
Well, I didn't have anything happen to me as far as it affecting my entire family. I would say that maybe my reaction to what I was experiencing affected my entire family. When I was about 5 years old, shortly after I had pneumonia, I started seeing a tall black shadow figure with red glowing eyes in my hallway outside my bedroom, and it would just sit and stand there and pace. And it would get so bad at night that I would sleep under my bed, that sometimes I even would, pee in my bed at night. I peed my bed. I would basically break down my parents' door and sleep on their floor just so I didn't have to sleep by myself, because I was terrified to death of this thing. And so I kept seeing it, and I kind of feel bad for my parents, because I don't really think they understood what was going on, because when they took me to doctors and things, of course the first things that doctors say is, she has an overactive imagination. She's experiencing night terrors. It's perfectly normal for a kid her age, except that I was not sleeping. And I honestly don't sleep that much to this day. I can't tell you, unless I've taken a sleeping aid or something, a night since I can even remember that I've actually slept through the night and been okay with it. I actually still see the shadow figure today. I've had 3 different psychics, without me even probing them or even giving them any information about myself, telling me that I have this thing that likes to attach itself to me. I don't know what it is. I've never really sat down and had anyone try to figure out what it is, because I'm still kind of terrified of it. But I think that it does open me up to a lot of things, especially now that I'm editing Stephen's book. I myself have been affected by some of the things that have happened from the Union Screaming House. When I went down to do a first edit of the first portion of the book last October, I actually stayed with Stephen and Elliot, which they live close to the Union House. And Elliot and I were walking by the Union House, home from a walk. It's stupid. I made him get up at like 6 o'clock in the morning to go walking, because I'm just a freak like that. But we walked by the house, and I wanted to see it, because you have to understand, as an editor and, all the history that I've learned about the land that this house sits on and the things that have happened on the land that this house sits on, I wanted to actually see the house so that I could envision, what's going on in the book a little bit better. So as I'm walking past the house, I instantly get cramps and I start my menstruation period 2 weeks early, which is highly unusual. That just doesn't happen. Elliot looked at me like, what's wrong? And I'm just like, I don't feel well at all. And so we went back, and I had started it. And I know that sounds strange just to blast on the radio, but people have to understand that when you're dealing with paranormal things, it can affect you physically in a lot of ways, and it may not affect anyone else. So that was one thing that happened. The next thing that happened is we were sleeping one night, and I got up to use the restroom. I had went into the bathroom and turned on the lights, and the walls were pounding and shaking in the bathroom of Elliot and Stephen's house. And as I turned around to turn the light off, I had scared Stephen to death because I probably looked like a huge shadow figure with the light behind me. And right before all of that happened, all of the electronics in the house were turning on and off by themselves, and there was pounding on the walls. So, it was just a lot of different things that were very strange. They had this drawer in their kitchen that would open by itself. I was in the kitchen by myself, and I saw it happen numerous times. I was obsessed with it. I kept taking pictures of it. Like, I was seeing things, and I was making sure I had proof. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So, you know, it's these types of things that are my paranormal experiences. However, I've always been interested in history, and I feel like sometimes when people go into historic places, they're looking for that excitement or their own ghost story to tell. But it's really not appropriate sometimes to go into a place without understanding what happened there and what went on in the building. One is you could get hurt, which is true, right, Elliot? Because a lot of people don't understand. A lot of people want to go and investigate the Union House, I think, to get a thrill.
I think that's why most people are into this field, just for the thrill of it.
And they don't understand that some of the history about the land that Elliot didn't mention is, you know, with African slaves, they weren't just brought to America and instantly Christians. They practiced voodoo. And on that land, if voodoo was practiced like it has been rumored, then there is some bad juju going on that land. So, you know, if you go into a place and you start provoking without knowing that what types of things happened on that land, such as people practice voodoo, you might be walking into something that you can't walk out of without having an attachment or some kind of bad thing happening to you.
And that, I think, is a big danger in the paranormal. And some people actually think that provoking will get the reaction that they want. And unless they do something like that, then it's going to be boring for them. Or else they like to go in. I love the teams that do this. I just don't understand it. They want to go in blind without knowing any history, without doing any research, because then they can just let the experiences happen. And I think that that's stupid. That's like, you know, trying to drive a car without taking classes or reading a manual or something. I think it's ridiculous.
Elliot has an instance. Elliot, tell Teresa about the time that you guys went and filmed at Morse Mill Inn, and how, you don't have to mention names, but how one of your team members provoked and what happened.
Oh, yes. So the team member was a buddy of mine, and, well, what happened was it was messing with some girl that was there. Well, this team member got angry, and he started talking smack to her, provoking, and next thing I know, I get like this push in my chest, and well, this guy, he's about, Shannon, about 5'10"?
He's about 6 foot tall.
He's about 6 foot tall, 5'10", 6
he's
foot,
a big
right
guy,
on there.
Though.
He's a big guy. I mean, he's probably a good 250, and when I look up, he's eye level with me and flying backwards into a table.
Whoa.
And this was during the filming of the Morse Mill project that Stephen was doing there, one of his documentaries that he made. And, you know, there's an instance where provoking, I mean, it was an innocent thing. He was defending someone on his team. But if you have something really bad, it's obviously not going to react well. So.
No.
What was I going to say? Oh, yeah. So we had talked about some of the things about the Union House and, you know, why it's important. Editing Stephen's second book, I have to tell you that he does go into a lot more of the history of the Union Screaming House and what happened. So, I'm kind of leaving a teaser there. But if he didn't go back and do that research, I don't think that he would have been able to successfully investigate that house or help the people in that house the way that he was able to do so.
Well, you got to be careful because, well, Pops went back, when he went back to investigate, it wasn't all fun and games. I mean, the woman he tried to help ended up getting possessed, and one time she came to the house banging on the door, and Pops didn't open the door because the cats were hissing at the door, the two cats we have. And the next thing he knows, this lady's daughter calls him and says, "Hey, if my mother comes around, don't open the door." He's like, "Why?" It's because she has a gun and she's coming to kill you. And that's
gosh.
Yes, this is right after she left. This is like, people don't understand. You got to be safe. You can't go in there all like guns blazing. You can't do that.
literally guns blazing.
Yeah.
And this was a woman that she's not normally homicidal.
I mean, this little woman's the sweetest woman you'll ever meet in your life. This woman will bake you a cake.
Yeah. Wow. I mean, it's just amazing how that house that it's still standing, and that you can only imagine what happened before you moved in, and then what happened after. And I remember watching that show, and I was sitting with somebody, and I'm like, oh, I would love to live in that house. I'm like, you know, be careful what you wish for.
Yeah.
Because you know, sometimes it's a little more than you can handle. Now, the two of you have very different experiences, though, as children. Where Elliot, what you happened to you was basically quantified because everyone in your family was experiencing something. Whereas Shannon, you had your parents that thought maybe you had an overactive imagination. And I think this happens a lot. I don't know what would be worse, having everyone in your family experiencing the horror that you're feeling or having nobody in your family believing you.
In my opinion, I think it'd be worse because you have nobody to console into about it. You know what I mean? Like, you have nobody to talk to about it because, like, everybody talked to.
Yeah,
nobody talks to. It's like, yeah, okay. You're full of
it. Yeah. I have to kind of tell you, it's awful funny because, and people kind of get a kick out of this, and I kind of laugh because I'm a jokester and I have a good personality, so I can kind of reflect at myself. But when I do go on investigations, I am very, very jumpy. But I'm very jumpy for reasons because
jumpy.
Because I'm scared to death that I'm going to not just see, like, somebody else's ghost, but I am actually going to be, like, face-to-face with one of my biggest fears as a child and actually, you know, be standing right in front of this shadow guy because he seems to be attached to me and going from place to place. And so, you know, like when I'm at the reformatory, Teresa, you know where my office is located.
Yeah.
It's like you can attest to it. It's in a very solitary place on the second floor. And, you know, there isn't much traffic up through there if there aren't day tours going on. And so I do hear a lot of things up there, and I'm very scared sometimes.
I got to tell a funny story about that.
You're going to tell a funny story about me? Okay, go ahead.
One time I call her, and I was discussing, I think, something about Pops' book, and she's like, okay, wait a second. I was like, what? She's like, I got to run. Like, what? I was like, so you got the phone? She's like, no, I got to run out of here. Next thing I know, I hear Shannon running through the building as fast as she can. She gets back on the phone. She's like breathing heavy. She's like, I'm all right.
All right, Teresa, you need to tell the entire audience, explain the Ohio State Reformatory to them if they have not been there. You need to tell them what it's like.
If you've never been to the Ohio State Reformatory or seen it on one of the numerous television shows that has featured it, it is definitely the most haunted prison, if not haunted place, in the United States. It's 250,000 square feet of stone and brick, and the place is creepy as hell. And parts of it, like the part where Shannon's office is almost the front part of it, like the superintendent's office and where the offices were. And it's not quite as creepy looking as maybe the cell blocks, but it's still very, very creepy and very old. And Shannon's office is just packed floor to ceiling with archives, with objects and artifacts. So if there's any credence to the theory that objects hold energy, she must have a bazillion ghosts running around in that room.
Oh, my God.
And some of the things in there, you're just like, oh, my God, what is that? You know, and people are dropping this stuff up all the time to her, too. It's just, it's never ending.
You know, John Zaffis would love it in there. I'm sorry.
Oh, my God, I was just thinking the same thing. The haunted collector would have a field day.
I was like,
one object that's haunted in here.
He would try to, like, be like, okay, I want that, and that, and that's all haunted. Because some of that stuff's really cool.
It is really cool stuff, though. And Shannon also has, like, the keys to the kingdom, so to speak, where she knows places in the reformatory that people don't normally get to go. And, I mean, there's the basements, and then there's, like, the basements. And there's the hidden rooms, and then there's the real other creepy hidden rooms. I mean, the place is amazing, and new stuff is just popping up all the time. And it's And to think that you're there sometimes, like, well, sometimes it's just me and Josh or just me and Scott. We're all alone by ourselves. But I don't think you're ever really alone there. So.
No. Well, and I can – oh, I'm going to cut you off there for a second, Elliot. And I'm going to say I can tell you and I know you know this, Teresa, that our ghost hunt manager, Scott Sukel, is amazing as far as, you know, how he runs the ghost hunts, both private and public, and he has a great volunteer staff behind him, and they work so hard, and he's such a trooper. You know, he is also a very, very dedicated researcher himself, and that's what I want the listening public to know. Our own ghost hunt manager does hours of research on the building, on, you know, who died where, if we can get that information, like inmates, objects. He works with me. We work very close on that stuff because he understands the value of research and history going along with ghost investigation. So he would be the first one to tell everybody that, you know, you've got to get into the archives and things like that. And what's exciting is he and I are creating the first archival library, research library, soon to probably be released in 2013, 2014, around there, because it takes a while to build. But it's going to be available for people to come in and be able to do research for a small fee in order to keep the archival library, you know, going. So
that is awesome.
Isn't that neat?
That's awesome. I think that's going to be, and I'm sure it'll be utilized as well. I think people will hopefully take advantage of that. And by the way, everybody, Shannon is a volunteer here.
Yes.
She does not get paid for what she does, and she spends a lot of time and a lot of sweat and a lot of her own effort at this place. So you have to give her kudos for that, because it's just amazing what she does, and the fact that it's a labor of love for sure. But to be there, think about that. You're there, you're scared, but you're still there and you're still doing it. And, I mean, you're there when no one else is there, the creepiest times. And I've been there with Shannon one time, just a real quick story I'll tell. We were there, I had to film a little thing for a little TV show, and we were just filming a B-roll, and we were just reenacting something that happened to me. And while we were filming that, there were things going on around us. In fact, what was happening, I think, around us was scarier than what we were supposed to be reenacting and filming. Remember the cell blocks when we were down on the one level of solitary? And the things, I mean, our camera guy was scared to death. I couldn't believe he stayed. It was hilarious. He was scared to death.
I definitely remember. And, you know, you're right. And I think what's important about how Elliot and I work together, and even Steven and I, is when Elliot and I, we had our show on a smaller, like, I wouldn't want to say a smaller radio network. They're great, they're up and coming, but it was just a different kind of format. And then we moved to a different format of a network where we could show pictures and things during our radio show. And, you know,
you can say the name of it and everything. That's fine. Go ahead and tell everybody about it, the name and the network and everything.
Okay, yeah, we were on Pararoc TV for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, after a while, we had to kind of let it go because we were getting so busy, and I have to get this book edited, and I mean, all of us just had something going on, but we actually would spend, I would say, days of research on our topics, and how we presented it to our listeners was that we would have a little fun with it and try to make history appealing to people. So, you know, we would pick topics like, you know, the history of torture objects and torture chambers. And
that's a fun show.
Yes, and the history of cannibalism. And,
fun.
Yeah, and then we also interview big names like Deidre Capone, Al Capone's great grandniece, and Larry Thomas, the soup Nazi from Seinfeld, and Vernon Troyer, who was telling his story growing up as a child. He was an NFL player. So we had all these different formats, and we kind of switched it up. But the one thing that we prided ourselves on was doing research even on our guests and on locations we talked about and things like that. And it's very important because you have some people who just want to, I don't know, live off the shine of others, I guess. And not put in the work. So
sometimes when I'd get some research and I'd send it to her and ask her what she thinks about it, and she threatened to send me worksheets to do. She's like, if you don't do some more, I'm going to send you worksheets.
Now, see, that's the educator in me. I'm an English teacher by trade, so... Like, you better do your worksheets, so...
But I think that's the problem. People see history as maybe one of those subjects that they found boring in school, and they don't understand how interesting it can be, and I think that people don't want to give it a chance. I wasn't huge into history when I was younger. In fact, I remember thinking back how little we were taught about the Civil War, and I think that that's a shame, and I think that it's horrible that we live in this country, and it's not taught as thoroughly and as well as it should be in school, because it is the history of our country.
Yeah, yeah. The reason I really got in the Civil War is my fourth grade teacher, Mr. Malone. He was very, very in the Civil War, so he taught. I mean, we had at least 2 or 3 months of nothing but Civil War.
That's awesome.
I think my opinion on research in history, it's like digging up treasure.
That's a great way of looking at it. That's a great way of stating it. I remember when I was in college, one of my many times in college, my 7 years of college, no degree, but I was sitting in class, and I had a history class, and it was a world history class, and my teacher didn't lecture. She told stories. And in fact, I remember I had to go and see her after class because the way she told the story of what we were learning was so captivating, people would forget to write notes. And this was
That's
before,
awesome.
This was before the days where people were bringing in recorders and everything like that, the day before I had a digital recorder in my hand at all times. But she was so compelling, and people were literally like at the edge of their seat, and she would end it almost like a cliff note, like a soap opera, where you had to come back, a cliffhanger. You had to come back the next day to find out what happened. And nobody wrote anything down. We were all just staring at her. And, we got to go back and get notes. And, you know, and just finally we'd have to go and reread. But she was like the best teacher because she told the best stories, and she made it so interesting. And I think, God, history is great. I wish I could just go back to school and just take all history classes. And you learn so much if you're learning the right history. And the more you dig, Elliot, like you said, it's like finding buried treasure. It's amazing. I think it's great. And I think that the key to the paranormal is telling the stories, not so much just documenting evidence. Because, let's face it, you put evidence out there and anything can be fake, anything can be ripped apart. You know, how are we ever going to really, really prove beyond a shadow of a doubt anything? These teams have put up evidence on their sites, and I'm sure they're very proud of what they caught, but I've never seen anything that I can't find a way to reproduce or to do something about it. So I think you're more important of telling the story and letting it be known and bringing awareness to it. That's why I love the two of you. I love the approach you have, the historical approach. And I love your name, too. So tell everybody what you guys call yourselves. This is great.
Well, we're adding two new members to our group. One is Josh Hurl, and I know you know Josh because obviously
I know
he's a great guy. And he is so pro-history when it comes to, you know, research and information. And also my niece, who is serving in the Navy right now in Japan, when she comes back in 2013, she's also going to be the fourth member of our group because we plan on, you know, expanding what we're doing, and we're going to need extra legwork. Elliot and I had talked maybe about filming our own low-budget documentary, but we want to do it in the historian style of, you know, taking history, making it so much fun and pleasurable for people to watch that they just enjoy history. It's not like watching a documentary, but it's watching like two people, you know, have a conversation about history, and we go to these different places and we experience it. You know, Elliot and I, while I was down editing the book, we went to different historical haunted places in Missouri. Zombie Road, the one featured in the first Children of the Grave by the Booth Brothers. I know you got excited.
Just thinking about that road, those shadows.
Oh my God, we have a story about that. Listen, okay. So first of all, funny story. is I'm in Missouri in October, and I'm not realizing that it's not the same as Ohio. So I have on my cute little sweater and my furry boots. And he's like, we have to walk this road, like, till we get to the railroad tracks. Well, he forgot to tell me it was, like, 10 freaking miles. So you have to walk literally, like, forever from this point where we were parked to get to the railroad tracks. And as we were walking, it was really creepy because there was absolutely nobody walking through, because it was like they made it into a bike trail, like part of it. I don't understand that, but hey, why
not?
Really,
you know what I'm
saying?
That part.
Yeah.
Really, really fast pedaling.
Yes, exactly. So as we're walking through, and you know how you know, squirrels dive and they're, you know, through the leaves and the trees. This was a different kind of rustling of the trees. It was almost like primate-like, like monkeys.
Yes.
And it was like we saw this little shadow figure, and it kind of resembled, like, it ran kind of like a monkey did through the trees and down through the other side. And as you're walking through, I swear to God, it felt like there was 1,000 eyes watching you. It was a very, like, it was terrifying. It was like 3 o'clock in the afternoon. But yet that road, I'm telling you, the karma on that grounds is so bad that it will kick up that type of activity in the middle of the day.
Yeah, it will.
Wow.
It was
frightening. We had to turn around and go back because we were getting, I mean, Elliot gets freaked out anyway because Elliot has a tendency of getting attachments to him really bad. So we had to get out of there because I didn't want him to bring something home with him.
Oh, my God. Too bad you couldn't have dropped your shadow man, Shannon, off there.
I don't need that.
Get rid of him.
I am so trying to get rid of him all the time. I take him places with me, and he never gets the hint. So.
A typical guy.
Sometimes
I know, right? Typical shadow man. Typical guy. Doesn't get the hint. But, yes, Teresa, I'm telling you, like, if you and I ever, like, to go down to Missouri and see some of the stuff down there, because it's a different world for some reason.
Oh, I bet. I can only imagine. And that was probably the whole movie was creepy, The Children of the Grave. But I remember seeing that and seeing some of the pictures, and you're looking at it, and you're like, that can't be real. That can't. Please don't let that be real. Because it was just so creepy, and
well,
these places are all over. And I think besides being a ghost hunter or a paranormal investigator, I think that's when you find these cherry places, these great places, is when you're into the history and you do the digging.
Yes, I was about to tell you, actually, with your history, what you want to do, if you wanted to get into stuff like that, is you want to actually look for the urban legends in your town. Like, literally, so that's how we found Zombie Road. It was an urban legend. Because me and my father and his group are the ones that actually first found it, because we all got the idea to start searching for urban legends and doing research on the urban legends. And we stumbled across Zombie Road. It was an urban legend, so we did the history research on it. And we went down there. This is before the Booth Brothers, and all this crazy stuff happened. And that's how we found it. You have to do that. You want to, like, invest, like, go to your library and dig up, like, they have like every town has, like, a little book that has all the urban legends in it.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure they do. And you know, that's what people ask me, what equipment should I get? If I can only get one piece of equipment, what should I get? What's the best thing to get to be a paranormal investigator? And I tell them a library card.
Yeah.
Thank you.
They look at me like I'm crazy.
I will, you know, Elliot knows, I straight up kick people's asses when they try to get, like there's all, I mean, I'm sorry, everyone is great, and I'm always, you know, I'm into being friends with everybody, I definitely am. I don't want to cause any drama, but I just wish that some people would respect that, you know, it's great when you go in and get evidence and bring it out, but what are you going to do with it past then? You know, if you really wanted to be a part of the paranormal phenomenon, why don't you go back and do research in history and then use your evidence to help you document things and share that with the community so that we can better understand what's happening as a whole?
Well,
you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. The way I look at it is, if you're a skeptic, I ain't going to prove it to you unless it's going to happen to you.
Right.
And
right.
I'm not out there to prove that the paranormal is real, because in my experience, I know it's real.
Mm-hmm.
So like I'm doing is I'm more interested in the history part of the history side of why it's like that.
Right.
I don't want to go to a place and I don't want to say, hey, I deem this place haunted. No, I'm not
so what? Yeah. What do you do? I mean, that's what used to kill me about watching certain TV shows and even certain teams work. First of all, they're reviewing their evidence, and then they'd find an EVP that says, help me, and it's 2 weeks later, and they're, you know, 70 miles away from the investigation site. Or they come in, and then they tell people, well, Jeff, it's haunted. Well, so what? I mean, obviously, these people knew it was haunted. They wouldn't have called a group of ghost hunters in, or at least in their opinion. So they're not helping anybody. You know, if you're doing residential, I think it's important to, like what your father did, to help the family that's there, to do what you can to help them either understand, live with what's going on, or find a way to, you know, make it, I don't want to say go away, but to lessen the whatever's happening, either by whatever they can do. And as far as some of these bigger places, like the Ohio State Reformatory, for one, and some of these so-called super haunts or mega haunts, I think that the historical research, I think, is great. And when you can find a ghost at one of these places or find some sort of paranormal activity, that's great because you get a whole another audience, a whole other generation, a whole other group of people that become interested. And then with those people, maybe they start visiting these museums or these historical societies or these prisons or these preserved places, and that generates money to keep these places open. But I think that in places like the Ohio State Reformatory or like what we have up here near me in Painesville, the Lake County History Center, I think that you need to tell the stories of the people that actually lived through this. I mean, these were people. Ghosts were, well, for most of them, were people, and they were living, breathing. They had families. They laughed. They cried. And I think it's important to get those stories told. That's what Kathy and I do with the Haunted Housewives. We don't care about documenting evidence because, like I said, in my opinion, people are, you know, they're going to dismiss it or whatever. I think it's more important to concentrate on telling the stories and bring awareness to it. And I think that's great that you guys do it because, you know, in residential, if you're not helping the people deal with what's going on or understand, what good are you doing? You're just there for your own cheap thrills.
Yes.
So I think it's a shame.
I also wanted to mention really quickly that you did talk about the importance of, you know, finding these different places that aren't blown up on TV and, you know, finding out more about them. And in Galion, Ohio, there is the Brownella Cottage run by the Galion Historical Society. And I've had the pleasure with Josh Hurl to where you're running, like, beginning workshops for people who want to go in and ghost hunt there. But our program is called The History Behind the Hauntings. So what that means is before they go into the Brownella, they get information about the building and also the historical research behind the building and, you know, how to approach the so-called, you know, ghosts that are in there, the bishop and, you know, whoever else lived in there. And also the Island House Inn in Port Clinton, Ohio, is another place that people can go and stay overnight and just do generic investigations for right now. But I'm telling you, the Island House up there has a world of history starting in 1886 and moving through the Prohibition era. There was so much rum running and gangster fights and going on at that hotel. It's not even crazy, and it's active.
Wow.
It's just untouched. And these are buildings that could use the money because they're going to take the money and not put it in their pockets, but they're going to make sure that these facilities are open. I mean, this hotel was built in 1886 and is still standing. And it's important to preserve something like that because it is very historical and it's beautiful. And same with the Brownella. I mean, they put the money back into the building, not into their pockets. So,
and that's important, absolutely, putting it back to the building. And these places, I got to get down to Galion. I'm dying to check it out. Well, we're almost coming to the end here of the broadcast, but I want to thank you both for coming on. I could have talked another hour. Shannon, I know you weren't feeling well this evening after your long weekend, but I really appreciate it, Elliot. It's been a pleasure to talk to you. We're going to have Stephen LaChance on soon. And we will be posting on our page, on the America's Most Haunted page, on the website and Facebook, the links to anything that you guys have that you want to promote as well.
Oh, that's great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, so anything, just if you got anything, a link or anything, and we'll write about it, we'll put it up, because people want to get involved and they want to learn more about history and hauntings and more about your story, Elliot, and anything you have on going on, Shannon, we'll definitely put that up there, and we'll promote it for you. And yeah, absolutely. And this is great. This has been a good tease for your cat's episode.
I know. That's what we're here for.
And I got a little teaser here about for the end. Pops has convinced me to start writing a book, so.
Uh-oh. So Elliot's next.
All right, excellent. All right, well, thank you, everybody. I'm Teresa Argy, the Haunted Housewife. This is America's Most Haunted. Thanks for listening, and good night.
Good night.
Night.
Good night, everyone.
Night.